previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
This is The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, Episode 6, for Law & Order True Crime The Menendez Murders, Season 1, Episode 7. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Blotter. Jeez, it's been a long day, folks. The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment. This is episode 6 for Menendez Murders, episode 7. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here with my co-host, Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
Hi.
We've recorded
a lot. You forgot like 400 words of this show title, by the way. I know. You've repeated it the second time. I know. Time is short.
Why? All right. Pretty good episode, I thought. An improvement over last week, in my opinion. But before we get into what we liked and didn't like, let's have the episode summary. That's our opening statement. Per TV Guide, with Lyle and Eric's juries both struggling to reach a unanimous decision, the possibility of a mistrial leaves Leslie hopeful for the opportunity to work out a deal with the district attorney's office. Meanwhile, DA Gil Garcetti takes action to counteract the declining public perception of the justice system, and Judge Weisberg's performance in the trial comes under intense media scrutiny given his record of hung juries and controversial verdicts. And there's also some guy who shows up partway through. I don't know. It's probably not important. I did like aspects.
It's J.K. Simmons, right? That's what I heard.
Yes.
J.K. Simmons?
Yeah, and thank God. It's always nice to see him. I liked some of what that guy was doing in the story, but other things were a big problem. Let's start with stuff we did like, though, our star witnesses. I will begin. I was super excited to see Harry Hamlin's name in the credits. I don't think I knew he was going to be in this as Barry Levin, Lyle's new attorney. After Jill Abramson leaves the case, he didn't get nearly enough to do, but he had...
Jill, what's her last name?
Abramson.
It's not Abramson, is it? Oh, they're both named Abramson?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not Abramson. What is her last name?
Jill. Julianne Nicholson.
Yes, Jill Nicholson. We'll get to that. I was sorry to see her go, but Harry Hamlin, said my notes in all caps.
Yeah, we don't talk enough about the Harry Hamlissance that has been going on for, like, I'm going to say the past 10 years, which I mean, that's a slow burn. But like ever since he showed up on Veronica Mars, he's really done some interesting, cool stuff. And I don't think that he gets enough credit because he's so low key. Like sometimes he's chewing scenery as when he's on Veronica Mars, I guess. But like on Mad Men, he was really good. He had a brief role, I now know, on Mom, playing a love interest for Anna Faris's character, and that was really good. And
I did not realize it was him on Mad Men for like 3 episodes, and then I was like,
yeah,
holy shit, like his character took the glasses off and I was like, oh my god, it's Aaron Heckles.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, I think he doesn't get enough credit as a character actor in his later years because he was like such a mimbo in his youth.
Yeah.
But he's good. He's really a solid choice for something like this.
He is. Again, he didn't get quite enough to do, in my opinion, but that's just me. And he's far from the only character about whom I had that complaint. But this is stuff that we liked. So let's move on to Jill Nicholson. Bitching at some, I don't know if it was a print or a TV reporter, but the reporter claimed that she cried during her closing, and she's like, actually it was my client that cried. And she ends the call with, I want a retraction and don't bury it, which was just it was great. And then Leslie comes into the conference room and there's a pause and she goes, do you want a hug? Which I just thought it was a really funny exchange
in this way where it's like, I'll give you a hug if you want a hug, but I'm pretty sure you don't want a hug. It's Jill Lansing, by the way. I looked it up.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry, Jill Lansing.
Yes. I loved that too, because I understand so well, every woman does, the frustration of being painted as like hysterical or emotionally weak. And like, there's no way you can fight back against it without making yourself seem even crazier. But I mean, not that I think she does in this case, but there's still that danger of like, should I just let it go or should I make a case about it? And she decided to, and I support her, but I understand, like, I thought that scene was handled well. What a line she's walking in that moment.
Yeah. And I also thought that the "do you want a hug" was pretty sarcastic and like leaning yeah. into the moment, and that like Jill's first instinct is to like shoot her the "fuck you" look. And then she's like, oh, joke. Yeah. Yeah. Good yeah. times. But there's a lot of that. We do see a lot of the jury deliberations and their struggles to come together. First of all, on what they should be charging, whether it's first degree murder, whether it's manslaughter, whether it's second degree murder, which sort of comes into the conversation later. And mm-hmm. there's a sharp divide between the jurors who are like very sort of pro the parents and how dare these bad seeds and ingrates, you know, make up these lies and also kill them. And the people yeah. who are much more sympathetic, in my opinion, to a somewhat anachronistic degree, but more sympathetic mm-hmm. to like just how these dynamics work in an abusive family and stuff like that. But there's also a lot of like just gender crap. Like that's so like a woman to take the side of the kids or, you know, whatever it is they say. Mm-hmm. But two of the primary litigants, I guess, or combatants are named Sarah and Dan.
Love
the jury's battling Bickersons, which was, I guess, hilarious up to a point until Dan proved to be completely intransigent about being an antediluvian sexist turd. So in the yeah. end, shut up, Dan, but effective portrayal.
Unlike your Dan.
No. He's just a regular modern turd. Just kidding. Love you, Dan.
I mean, we're all turds in our own way, right? Saying anything, but I just have in my notes next pecker, because that comes up in the testimony that gets read back. It's just a word you don't hear anymore, and I feel like we should bring it back. It's very evocative.
Yeah, it really is. I co-sign that, and I support you.
I also wanted to just mention, as you glanced on in your last point, the jurors who are defending Kitty and Jose against the charges that their sons have made against them, you know, in posthumously, and that they are like, they're good. They provided for those boys. He worked hard. They went to every one of their tennis matches. Like, is this really what it comes to? And also, I mean, I guess there's no way that you can possibly correct for this when you're choosing the jury, but it seems like having this low a standard for what makes a parent a good parent is something that should be disqualifying in a case like this, because there's more to it than going to every tennis match, sir.
Well, yeah, like they kept a roof over their heads, like, uh-huh, like this is the bar. Yeah. In exchange, right. you get to put, you know, desk implements into your children. No, that's
yeah,
not how
there's
that
also
works.
A point where someone's where one of the female jurors is like, I spank my girls and, you know, this is making me feel bad about that. And one of the male jurors is like, but they probably turned out fine. And I kind of wanted her to be like, no, they're both in prison, but that doesn't happen.
Oh, God. Yeah. So you had in your notes that was convincingly creepy and gross. My next note yeah. was that the 90s neckties on display are also convincingly creepy and gross, like to an almost 90210 contemporary degree. They're not too flashy about the costume design and the set elements that locate you in the 90s, mostly. Mm-hmm. Like, at least production wise they're not, but it's definitely the 90s. Like, a lot of big suit jackets on the dudes, a lot of ugly cheap looking neckties. It's I like it. I mean, I don't, they're hideous, yep. but it's well done.
Yep, agree. And as some of the people listening to this know, we are still ass deep in the 90s on our sister podcast again with this Beverly Hills
sure
90210. So this is a constant source of both pain and levity. So if you enjoy our discussions of the fashions of the 1990s here, you might want to join us over there too. We get into it, and there's a lot more women's fashions too.
Ooh, fashions, yes, if you can call them that, indeed.
Exactly. Weisberg, still a thin-skinned crybaby. We get another shot of him watching coverage of himself on TV at like a bar at some event in it, where he's in a tuxedo and just looking morose about what a fuck up he is, which I enjoy. Anthony Edwards has no vanity in this part. He is really playing this guy like a shithead, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. He's like, he's also having a much more minor than the Hamlinaissance, but the Edwardian mm-hmm. Renaissance is also sure. pretty good. Like he, uh-huh. I think, is steering into that, like the haplessness of the Mark Green character from ER, and mm-hmm. like just really leaning on that in the roles that he chooses to take. Zodiac to a lesser extent, but I enjoy that about him, that he has a sense of humor about it. And he's like, I'm the chinless guy who obsesses yeah. and like reads the comments, and good for him. Someone's got to play those parts.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a part like Dr. Green on ER is so career defining. So yeah, when you end it, you have to go do something that's really different. And, you know, maybe eventually he will get his Breaking Bad moment like Bryan Cranston had after Malcolm in the Middle, like something that's so different but really shows your range. I think he could. I think he could play a part like that.
Yeah, he tried to. Wasn't he on that, like, he on that Nazis frozen in the Arctic Circle show? What was it called? Zero Hour?
Right.
Dave Cole would know what I'm talking about.
Are you sniffing glue? What are you talking about?
I am not. I actually, during this conversation, am also trying to get a large kitten off my desk. But I swear to God, this was a thing. He was like, they were trying to make him the like Cranstonian action hero for a second. It was like 5 years ago. No, nothing.
I'm looking at IMDb. It's not, well, he was in Zero Hour. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
But there were definitely,
oh, I forgot
Nazis
about the Nazi aspect
that.
Of that. Oh my God. Zero Hour.
No.
Poor Anthony Edwards. Okay. Yeah. That was a bad call.
Me.
Maybe he thought that was his Breaking Bad. It's not.
What should that brain cell of mine be storing?
Oh my God.
That it's storing fucking Zero Hour.
As far as your brain knows, your social security number is now 5 digits, and that's all you got left.
Well, we had a good run. Anyway, moving mm-hmm. on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the mistrial, we get a moment where Leslie has a bunch of the female jurors over to her house for a guac party, and Eric calls in to thank them and is instantly super creepy. And Leslie has to just be like, okay, we're going to go. Bye-bye. Like, see, he's so starved for human contact that he's making it creepy. And her manner in that scene was amusing to me.
It was so awkward. And whoever decided to leave in the sound of him breathing on the phone, and then she's like,
oh God,
well,
so
any hoodle, click.
Yep.
Yeah. It was yep. good.
And then just two other quick ones. Levin's very tall, tall hair. Congratulations to Harry Hamlin. Then he can still make that happen. I bet that's like at least 50% is real hair.
Yeah, I think it is. We also get some Ozeal, Sam the Eagle. It looks taller yeah. again.
Ozeal. And when Leslie is trying to negotiate for the court to hire her to represent Eric, right?
Yes,
Eric, because the family is the estate is out of money. They can't afford to pay her anymore. She says that she's been working on this case for 8,600 hours. And she's like, that makes my fee only like $68 an hour. I'm here over here like, OK, that's not bad. But also, shit, like 8,600 hours is a long time to do anything.
It really is, which is probably why Jill Lansing was like, my kids just went
that's
to
enough.
College. I'm not even sure where they are. I got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her departure will be covered in our next section, Aggravating Factors. Stuff about the episode that we could aggressively live without. Tara, would you like to begin?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure this is based on a real, like, real news reports or coinages that happened at the time. But as we open the episode, we get a news reporter saying that as the van is pulling in, there's signs of Menendez fever, which really is that what it's come to fever wise?
I
do better 90s.
Really? Yeah. In the promo for the next episode, the finale, they mention, like, there's some news report that's like, it's Menendez mania. Like, it's not hula hoops. Ugh. Okay. But I, like you, I agree that this was probably based in some twisted reality.
Mm-hmm. And so was this, but it still made me laugh. Jose's mother praying at the end of the trial, surrounded by like 5,000 candles, like seriously so many candles that her daughter has to say there's more there than at the Vatican, which she may not be exaggerating. It's a lot of candles. Like, we get it. They're lit.
Yeah, I did enjoy that the daughter sort of shaded her for that. But yeah, it was a lot.
This is also something that I assume was real, but it surprised me that I think it's Sarah, one of the Bickersons. They mentioned that her husband works in the DA's office, which if that were the case, would you make it onto a jury? It seems like that would be something that would get you barred or whatever.
Yeah.
Bounced.
Yeah. Or that one of the attorneys would strike you. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd run out of strikes by that time. It's hard to say.
Right.
Yeah, that did strike me as odd. The jury deliberations definitely put the deliberate back in deliberate. It's actually not that it was that ponderously paced. It was pretty good, but they definitely had the writing had a list of points that it wanted to make sure we got. And it wasn't necessarily super concerned with like how juries actually function and talk to each other. Like, it started off okay and felt naturalistic, but there was definitely that checklist feeling. And certainly when some of the jurors were making, don't get me wrong, valid points about the power dynamics of abuse and how sexual abuse and sexuality are not related and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. This is all true. These are good points. I'm not sure that you would have even had one person who was that alert to these distinctions at that time, much less several making those points. But I don't know. I guess this is one of those things in a show like this where you have to sort of show that you get it, capital G.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that bugged you or not.
I did find this episode a little bit slow. There was a point when I looked at my clock and was like 23 after. That doesn't sound right, but it did pick up for me as it went on. So yeah, it did seem deliberate. Putting the deliberate in deliberations is a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, there was also some time spent with the baby. I mean, we'll get to that later in the list, but really, like, enough with the baby, enough scene setting with the baby. Enough with the holidays also. And that kid actor that they have playing the baby is very cute. Mm. But we get it. God.
Yeah.
Get it.
Yes. The baby is the symbol for everything that is good and pure in Leslie's life. Got it.
Yeah. I also had, no, don't go, Jill, which we've already covered. I thought Julianne Nicholson did a good job in this role. I will miss her and her perfect bowl of hair.
Yep.
I am glad that in the show, Lyle was finally moved to a different part of the jail from Eric, because I was not buying the neighboring cell's contrivance, particularly not after years, plural. It's not Mayberry. Like, there'd be other dudes in there. They wouldn't necessarily be next to each other. Like, if they have individual cells, I don't know. Like, just much too scripted and convenient. And I didn't care for that. So, what else did I not care for? We only had one scene with Ozeal, Judalon, and the Judalubes. Completely inadequate. Also, this was like a flashback, wasn't it? To the settlement of her lawsuit against him?
I didn't catch where that was in the timeline.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. That would be a miniseries that I would watch, just that lawsuit and that crazing, and we get 2 minutes. But Josh Charles manages to be serving 100% Sam the Eagle realness at all times. I am here for it. I love them both.
Yeah.
Please do a spinoff, Dick Wolf. I am not a crackpot.
Yeah, spin it off into, like, put it on oxygen so that you can, like, really crank up the camp value of this story and these two performances and, like, actually try to eat Lifetime's lunch in terms of like the true crime scripted programming, because I want to see that.
Yeah, same. You know what I don't need to see any more of? Oh, Jay Simpson. Oh my God. Like, it's just so.
I mean, technically, we don't see him.
Yeah.
He's only a disembodied voice.
Which is also, oh, I mean,
so dumb.
Gazy. Like, he's brought in and there's like, juice this, a juice that. We don't see him. We see like his forearms at one point. And this is why Lyle was moved. And then, I mean, here's the one thing, and I referred to this earlier, here's the one useful aspect of bringing OJ in, is that I think a lot of people forget that for the second trial, this case like completely dropped beneath the horizon for 98% of the American public, even true crime nuts, because of OJ. So that wasn't, like, it wasn't completely irrelevant, but there had to have been an easier way to do that than just, like, I don't know, not showing him and then casting this, I don't know, the OJ imitation, quote unquote, is not even close.
No, it's not.
It sounds like he's gargling Angie Harmon. It's just not, it's not workable.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, like, the Cuba Gooding Jr. portrayal was not a very good vocal match for him either, but that was at least a full portrayal where you could see, like, okay, there was more to it than trying to do like a rich little imitation of him. Like, I get that, but in this case all we have is the voice, so maybe nail it. Just a thought.
Yeah,
hire OJ to do it, he's out, and he would.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure
he absolutely would.
I mean, don't, but
yeah,
you know.
I mean, yes. But you had another note about the involvement of OJ and his cell neighbor, Eric.
Oh, God. Well, just that Leslie has to, you know, start doing talking heads about, you know, current cases and stuff. And when she sees herself on TV, she self-deprecatingly tells her husband that she's run off and joined the media circus, which, like, clunk.
Yeah,
I get it, but. That's not a great line.
Yeah.
I don't feel that the real Leslie would say something like that.
Well, and just because Edie Falco can almost heave these lines over the transom doesn't mean you should keep making her do it. So quit it.
Yeah. But also we get scenes of like Eric advising OJ how to behave now that he's about to go to trial. Like, really? I mean, that either of the brothers would do that is absurd, but like that it would be Eric of the two of them seems really ridiculous. Like, what do these two people really have to say to each other? Come on.
Well, yeah. I mean, as the biggest celebrity clients in the jail at the time.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I did kind of appreciate that I could recognize Leslie's cadences in the advice, and it was definitely like almost verbatim stuff that she had told him in episode 1 or 2. And So that was kind of a nice nod to how important the two of them are to each other.
Yeah.
But I just wish they hadn't involved OJ. Like, just get some anonymous, you know, new kid, like guy who's around Eric's age and is also a kid, and that Eric can be more of a believable, not mentor, but advisor in that situation. And finally,
yeah, I mean, I gather this is another one of those things where it's like, it seems weird to us, but it's based on real events. It's still weird though.
Well, yeah. And I don't know. I guess we can look up, or you can always correct us on the forums, previously.tv/forums. How closely this aligns with their timelines and various facilities. But I feel like at no time was OJ around anyone except like his own people. Like I was not under the impression that he was ever around other prisoners long enough to talk to, but.
Right.
It has been a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's something else that lasted a long time. The last item on our list of aggravating factors was the toy store scene at the end. Leslie contemplating at length like other kids of various ages in the toy store and like contemplating the sad childhood of her client and also the repeated, you know, mentions by other characters throughout the episode, including Detective Sam Yeager, that, you know, they grow up so fast and you don't want to miss it. And can you have it all? Stop. Just stop. And then they just keep pushing in tighter and tighter while Edie Falco summons up tears, because Edie Falco is a pro. But again, don't, just because she can do it doesn't mean you should ask it from her. And I don't think it's fair to ask of this character.
Yeah, it's so corny. Like, I just don't believe that Leslie is this much of an open wound, even after 8,600 hours of being on this case, that something like this, like seeing a bunch of stranger children in the store, would make her like, yeah, they're so pure. Like, really? I just don't believe it.
Yeah, like all these happy kids, like only on TV.
Who cares?
Is there a pile, P.S., of this many toddler age children and no one is crying? Like, yeah, like all these happy kids. Did someone release ether into Toys R Us? Like,
right, like 4 days before Christmas, they're not like scratching each other's eyes out to get to the toys they want. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't either. So I guess it's time to render the verdict on the episode. Would you like to begin or shall I?
I enjoyed the jury parts. This was fine. I'm ready for this to be over, though. You?
Yeah, me too. I appreciate that they're getting into parts of the case that I think we're all less familiar with for the reasons that I stated. And it doesn't feel too rushed or too checklisty, but it does a little. And I'm wondering if they all sort of got to this part of the narrative and were like, maybe we took the wrong approach to this, because a lot of it is so granular and procedural about points of law, or it's just Weisberg and Abramson hating each other and sparring, and you know, a little of that will go a fair way. So yeah, like I liked this one a little better than the last episode, but as we said last time, I think this could have been 6 and not 8, and I'm not sure. Like, I just wonder how they're going to wrap it up, or if it's just going to kind of trail off.
Well, I mean, they have to end it before A&E starts its real life Lyle show.
Oh, yeah. And before Eric tells all.
Yeah. Oh, right. It's Eric. Sorry, not Lyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, good luck to him, I guess. But again, I'm sort of struggling to understand why now with all of this. But
yeah,
it's not for me to say. Here's what I can tell
you. I really think it's because the OJ stuff was such a sensation that there was just a scramble of like, what else is there that's of a comparable, you know, scandalous and memorable true crime nature that we can rush to market as fast as possible. And now it's just like the site. That's how long the cycle is.
Yeah.
Just a guess.
Yeah, that, I mean, that could be. And it could also be that like this happened and then there was that flurry of, there was, you know, the corresponding flurry of nonfiction programming to like draft in its wake. It's hard to say.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes. That this is, it just took this long to make this thing.
Right.
And so, you know, like it's not an anniversary or anything of Menendez, although given how long it went, any year could practically be an anniversary of note because it was forever. True. But yeah.
All right. Well, we are almost at the end. What that end is going to look like, I'm not sure. I mean, we know basically the end, but until next time on the Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, per TV Guide, in the finale, after the first trial ends with a hung jury and the district attorney refuses to offer the defense a deal, a second trial gets underway with Barry Levin joining the defense team. Seems like we saw that. Come on, TV Guide. Political collusion between the DA's office and Judge Weisberg reaches an apex as Garcetti fights to repair the office's reputation. When Judge Weisberg disallows Lyle and Eric's family members to testify, it's up to Eric to once again recount the stories of abuse before the jury determines a verdict. Kind of feel like we saw 90% of that in this episode, but
yep.
Until we meet again, you can admit The Blotter Presents to your social media circle at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. This has been The Blotter Presents Summary Judgment, and until next time, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.